everyone, and welcome to Friends of the Force. I'm your host, Sarah.
And I'm your host, Brad.
And on today's special interview episode, we are bringing you an interview live from Celebration with author of Star Wars Brotherhood, Mike Chen.
Yeah, we were so excited to talk with Mike. It was one of our first in-person interviews that we've done here. We obviously loved Brotherhood. So in case you don't know about Mike, like Sarah said, he's the author of Brotherhood, but some of his other work includes the novels Here and Now and Then, A Beginning at the End, We Could Be Heroes, and Light Years from Home. Previously in Star Wars, he wrote for the From a Certain Point of View Empire Strikes Back anthology. He wrote the Palpatine-centric story Disturbance, which was actually the first time he was back on the pod back in the year 2020, which was a wild ride of a year.
Literally 1,000 years ago at this point.
Yeah. So how wonderful it is that we go from talking with Mike on Zoom chat and now talking to him at Celebration and getting to share the Star Wars love together in person.
Yes, it was so much fun to get to chat with him all about our collective love for the Revenge of the Sith novelization and the prequels and everything that we loved about this book. And please forgive us, or rather thank us, if you hear any background noise, including the rustling of the wind or the tweeting of the birds or perhaps somebody walking by in the background, because we enjoyed a lovely outdoor, more or less picnic interview. And the outdoor noises maybe just be a part of this interview, and that's okay. It adds to the ambiance.
Yeah, it's all about the ambiance here. So we are so excited to bring you this interview, and without further ado, let's turn it over to our conversation with author Mike Chen.
So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
A certain point of view?
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
All right, so we are here at Star Wars Celebration with author Mike Chen, who just recently wrote the book Brotherhood, which, in my opinion, is the perfect prequel love letter that we've gotten this year in the age of Kenobi. Mike, thank you for joining us back on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, sitting in lovely Disneyland Hotel's courtyard.
Yeah.
It's such a lovely day out. This is, you know, the perfect outdoor interview here.
So my first question for you is, again, we're at Celebration. So how does it feel to be back at a convention, you know, as a Star Wars author writing your first like full novel after, you know, Empire Strikes Back, your short story in that?
So I have my panel tomorrow, so I can't speak to that. But the signing itself, I was waiting for my friend. Like, we were going to hang out in the fountain in front before we actually went in. And people were coming up to me because I had posted my picture on Twitter of like where I was sitting. And people were coming up to me with books to sign. And I'm like, I was texting my wife. I'm like, this is wild. This does not happen with my, like, if I do an event, like a standalone for like my HarperCollins novels, like 15 to 20 people come, you know, it's fine. You know, they're dedicated readers and that's cool. But this is like nothing else. I was at the Penguin Random House booth today, and they did a tally of how many books they sold to get signed, not counting the ones that people just brought, and it was over 100. And like the line just went, like, Adam Christopher was actually like, he had took photos of the line from all different angles and he sent it to me. So yeah, it's like the response, I was very worried about people's response to this book, because I think people, you know, every Star Wars book takes a different tone. And I knew that I thought mine might be too slow for some people, because the first act really leans on the characters, like, and giving some time to see like where Obi-Wan and Anakin and Padme are at this point in their lives. And like, that was very intentional, because I wanted to give them space. They're in such a severe transition between Geonosis and the Clone Wars that I think as people, they deserve to be, you know, discovered where they're at. And I was really worried that was not going to fly well, but people seem to really, really like it.
That's so interesting that you say that, because I feel like that's the exact things that like fans are looking for.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I dared to look at the Goodreads reviews, and it's like 90%, like, this is the book I've been waiting for. There's 10% of people who say like, it's too slow. I want more like an action Clone Wars arc. And like, that's fine. You know, like, I knew I was not giving that to them. Like, it takes about halfway for like the action sequences to really kick in. But I think people love these characters, and they want to give them time to breathe because during the Clone Wars, everything is so intense. And we're like, but let's find out more about what makes them tick. And I think what's important, what makes them happy? That was really something that I really wanted to dive into. So that's a deviation from how is your celebration.
No, but that's all good stuff. And I'm glad, I'm so happy that the response has been so positive about this book because, you know, we've all kind of been waiting, these prequels fans, for it to come back in full force.
We got a
taste of that in 2019 with the Phantom Menace celebration, and now we're back better than ever. Kenobi, Andor, the 20th anniversary of Attack of the Clones. So it's a prequels heavy year. I'm seeing people in Jar Jar shirts with Jar Jar backpacks. You know, I'm seeing people with all of the early 2000s style t-shirts. Mm-hmm. Like it's very fun to see.
I feel like for a lot of people, it feels like the season 7 of the Clone Wars was like a validation that like Disney is going to embrace this era. Mm. And they recognize that there is a, you know, I mean, I was born in 1978, so I grew up with the original trilogy, but I consider the prequel era, I think Empire is still my favorite film, but the prequel era as a whole is my favorite. And to see after so much, you know, garbage thrown about it, yeah, for people to really embrace and be like, this is really good storytelling, these characters are great, and it's like very Shakespearean in scope, for them, for people to actually finally recognize that is really, really validating.
So yeah, you mentioned, you know, being born in 1978, kind of growing up with these stories. Can you talk a little bit more about your personal fandom and what, sure, brought you to today wearing the sand shirt and writing this book?
Like I am now, I didn't like sand growing up. I remember like going to the beach one time with a family friend and it was like cold and I'm like, why is this sand in my shoes? This is the worst thing ever. And I still feel that way. I hate sand so much. So I grew up with the original trilogy. I remember like I watched Return of the Jedi in the theater. I had the toys growing up. My brother had toys too. They broke really easily growing up. Heir to the Empire, when that came out, like it was a big deal. And I think I believe it was Dark Force Rising where like my buddy and I went to the local Walden Books and they had like a Star Wars party. So they rolled out like the VHS player like on the cart that you used to have in school, you know, like that sort of thing. And so like they played that in the background. Yeah, just everything like that, like Super Star Wars for Super Nintendo. Like I had a Sega Genesis, but we rented a Super Nintendo just to play Super Star Wars, like that sort of thing. Yeah, so it's just been a big part of my life. And like when I went to college, my first year in college was the special edition year, and we were lucky. There was like about 5 or 6 of us on my dorm floor who were all like really into Star Wars. And so we recruited like everyone on our floor. Like we drove out to like the special edition premieres together and everything. It was really, really great. It's just been a part of my life. Like Attack of the Clones is the second date I went on with my wife, and she wore a Princess Leia shirt on our first date.
Amazing.
So,
that's a perfect first date. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I will say that like as of this recording, I have not seen Kenobi, and my wife is resisting watching. I told her, like, you can watch it. I understand. She says, no, I'm gonna wait for you to come back. So
it sounds like you married the right person.
Yeah, we have built a marriage around our fandom.
Amazing. That's so much fun. That's so much fun.
So with the prequel trilogy, and you talk about like how important that is to you. Like, what is it really about that time period? And like when you're writing Brotherhood, what were some of the most important aspects that you wanted to capture from that era in order to have the story fit in seamlessly with the rest of the trilogy?
So the first part of that question, I've wondered this. I'm like, what is it about the prequels? Because I grew up with the original trilogy. It's kind of like with Doctor Who, you typically like your first Doctor that you run into. And obviously this is not my first Star Wars. And the more I think about it, I think I even started to feel this way even before the Clone Wars came out, but the Clone Wars like really like hammered it down and like cemented it. Like, this is my favorite. And I think it's because I like melancholy in my art. That's why I like a lot of sad indie rock. And there's just like, even in The Phantom Menace, which is full of joy, there is this like sense of like something bad is happening. And then, like, you get it in Attack of the Clones even more. And then Revenge of the Sith, which, I mean, like, I'd say, like, you know, there's execution flaws in The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. I totally recognize that. I still love them. Revenge of the Sith is basically perfect to me. It is an amazing film. And one of the things I just love about it is that, like, there is just this overwhelming momentum that, like, something bad is really happening. And you can see all the characters, like, trying to push and pull away from it. And they just can't do it. So I really like that. I like the gray morality of, like, things are falling apart and people are trying to do right. And it's different from the original trilogy where it's, like, it's very stark. Like, here are the heroes, here are the villains. We're the little guys fighting the good fight. And so there's just so much more complexity in the prequel trilogy. And then you get that really expanded upon in the Clone Wars. My wife actually had not seen Clone Wars until a few years ago. And I'd always talked about it with her, but it's like she just never had the time to. And then so before Mandalorian, like when we knew Ahsoka was going to be on Mandalorian, I'm like, okay, I'm going to show you a few essential episodes, and then we're going to finish with the Siege of Mandalore. And then after we finished that, first thing she said is, wow, Ahsoka has seen some shit. Like, yes, she has. But then she's like, I love Anakin now. I'm like, I know you do, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I think like it's something about how there's so many moving parts. The whole era is very, very dynamic, and that's what really intrigues me. There's a second part to that question that I totally missed.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you're hitting it a little bit in terms of like what I asked was like about how you fit some of the most essential aspects of the prequels in, and I think you're speaking to it a little bit. Is like the prequels is sort of this downfall of this age of the Republic where maybe people can try to work together and it turns into this sort of authoritarian government and all of our heroes go through the worst possible experiences of their life. But here in your book, you're sort of having the high point right before the dip.
What I really wanted to, so there's two things that I really wanted to hammer on is the characters themselves, because like, you know, George had them say some ridiculous stuff. I mean, like, we'll just flat out say it.
Yeah.
But I wanted to, like, ground that in reality and revisit those moments. So, like, the line about sand or, like, even like, there's a callback to The Phantom Menace with, like, the Are You an Angel line. And in Brotherhood, I write it as, like, Anakin's thinking, like, he was so taken with her that he just blurted out the first thing that came to mind. And, like, we have all done something incredibly stupid, like, in the face of, like, you know, infatuation or whatever. So I wanted to be able to revisit and recontextualize those moments for people to like empathize and really like Anakin. Because I think one of the biggest problems with going from his age of like 9 to like 19 to 22 or whatever, it's like the gaps are so big that you see all of these highlight points, but you don't quite understand how he transitions from place to place. And that was one thing that like I really, really wanted to hit. And the other thing, like on a political level, is why is everyone going along with this?
Right.
Because it's like if you go from the end of Attack of the Clones and then you go into Clone Wars, I mean, like, you know, there's hesitation. Like at the end of Attack of the Clones, you see Bail Organa be like, you know, what the hell's going on? And then like Obi-Wan and Mace and Yoda are like, I don't understand, but we're doing this. And then by the time you get to Clone Wars, which is only like a few months, they're just like, we're doing this, let's go. And I really wanted to understand that because I thought there was like, you could probably explain a lot about why the Republic fell and why the Jedi fell with just that. So I really wanted to like sew in a lot of the stuff that was like originally planted in Attack of the Clones, but then contextualize it knowing that it's transitioning into the Clone Wars. And there was, at first it felt daunting, but then the more I thought about it, I'm like, oh no, this is all right here. I just got to connect some dots.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, that business on Cato Nemoidia, why did you feel that this was the right thing to tackle for this book? What brought you to this point for this story?
There's a very, very easy answer to that, and that's because Del Rey asked me to do it.
All right. Shout out to Del Rey. We're big fans, obviously.
They, so the way that it worked was when I had my first call with my editor Alex Davis, who's here at Celebration. He sat with me for my signing. It was great. He said, we would like it to be about that business on Cato Neimoidia. Like, I already knew it was going to be an Anakin and Obi-Wan story. I knew they wanted it to be a bridge between Attack of the Clones and the Clone Wars. But then he said, like, we want it to be about that business. And I'm like, okay. And I started thinking about it. And we started talking about the Neimoidians as a people. And he said, like, we want a badass Neimoidian. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. And then we started talking about, I brought up Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Because they really, like, in Star Trek The Next Generation, the Ferengi are just kind of like this joke character. And then in Deep Space Nine, one of the main characters is a Ferengi. And then, like, two of the supporting characters are Ferengi. And you really get to explore their culture. And so we talked about, like, doing that for the Neimoidians while also adding, like, a badass hero for that. So that's really all where it started. It was, like, this, you know, rough direction of, like, let's figure out what that business is, but then here are the guidelines for it. And then I just wrote up a pitch from there.
Yeah. So what was it like to get that call from your agent? Like, I know you've talked about how this was the dream.
Yeah. No, specifically a prequel era.
Prequel era. Yeah.
It's like, my dream pairs to write would have been Dooku and Qui-Gon, but Kevin Scott did that. Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, but Claudia Gray did that. And then Anakin and Obi-Wan. I got to do that. And I would say also Anakin and Ahsoka. Like, but that's Ahsoka is, you know, E.K. Johnston, so I feel like I can't touch that. So when I got the call, I was, you know, it was in the middle. It was May 2021. We were finishing up homeschool kindergarten, which don't ever do that. It is, it's so incredibly terrible. It's so hard. And so I'm like trying to do like my day job, like, you know, corporate email stuff while like keeping my daughter like on task with her teacher online. And my phone rings and I see it's my agent, and my, like, I had nothing on submission. So I answer the phone and I say, why are you calling? I don't have anything on sub. And he said, you're going to get to write Star Wars. And then I'm like, whoa. And he said, you're going to write Anakin and Obi-Wan. And I just kind of like stopped. And then I started to ask like practical questions. And this is when my wife came in the room and I asked, like, is it during Clone Wars? Is it Attack of the Clone? Like, when is it? And she looks at me, at my wife, cause she just walked in and she's like, what? And then I go, it's Eric. And then she's like, do it. So I, like, it was an immediate, like, yes, this is awesome. There's also the panic of, like, I'm on contract for this other book. How am I going to do that? Mm-hmm. And my wife was very much like, we will find a way to do it. Like, don't worry. Like, you need to do this. So I will say that during the writing of this book, it came during, like, incredibly stressful times, as we've all had in the past year and a half or so. And getting to write Anakin and Obi-Wan was basically, like, playing a role-playing game in my head, where I'm, like, I am moving the pieces, I am making the decisions, I am, like, you know, visualizing, like, the action and reaction. So it was completely fun. It never got old. All of my other books, I hit a point during revision where I'm, like, I don't hate the characters, but I hate the story, and I hate this prose, and I think I'm a terrible writer. And then usually it comes back around where I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. I like them. But with this, it never felt that way. It just felt like playing the whole time.
Yeah, with Anakin and Obi-Wan, they're such, I mean, critical characters to not only the prequels, but the entire saga. And there's so many places that we've seen them get developed, including Obi-Wan that's now out. So there's going to be a whole new like, you know, all these new themes and moments to look at. And so for you, when writing those two characters, what were the most important highlights, or the most important things that you wanted to highlight for those characters, whether it be traits or experiences, in order to create new connective tissues between, like, you know, the Clone Wars, Revenge of the Sith, Attack of the Clones, like, you know, all these different places we see them?
So there, I think it's a little different between the two, because with Anakin, it goes back to, like, if you follow me on Twitter, I've, like, talked about this a lot, and it's Anakin's voice. And I talk about how in Attack of the Clones, when he's with anyone who he considers a senior, so Obi-Wan, Yoda, Mace, Palpatine, whoever, he's got this, like, his gait, his shoulders, his voice, like, everything's super formal. And then when he gets loosens up, like, around Padme, you first see it, like, when they're on the freighter to Naboo, and you're like, oh, he's a human underneath. And you start to see little cracks here and there. And then, like, it just jumps into Clone Wars, which is very, like, Matt Lanter's Anakin, I feel, is very on par with Hayden's at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, which, you know, the opening of Revenge of the Sith is like a big Clone Wars movie. Yeah. So it's like, well, what is the line there? Like, how can he be like so stilted around the Jedi and then like human around, like, when his emotions are tapped for real and he has this guard down? And that was one of the big things I really wanted to get into and like basically be like, we should like Anakin. You know, we should not just empathize with him, but we should like him and see that, like, he's just kind of a big dork, you know?
With a big heart.
With a huge heart. Yeah. And that's his problem, because no one has ever, like, counseled him on, like, dealing with that. So I really wanted to embrace that aspect of him rather and explain it to give it a proper bridge between Attack of the Clones and the Clone Wars. And then with Obi-Wan, I think there's a lot of... I wanted to play with the idea of, like, empty nest syndrome for Obi-Wan, where he has, like, his whole life since Qui-Gon, it's been built around this promise he gave to Qui-Gon. Like, everything that he does is, like, trying to fulfill this. And so what happens when he actually does fulfill it? You know, he's... Then, like, how does he handle it? And then I got the sense, based on Claudia Gray's Master and Apprentice, that Obi-Wan has some pretty big problems with imposter syndrome.
Yes.
And to see that where, you know, he's dealing with, like, the most powerful, the most headstrong, you know, the most Anakin Jedi ever, he's going to wonder, like, did I do this right? Especially because it happened with, like, this promise to his dying master. And so for him, like, that seemed like a necessary bridge to get to James Arnold Taylor's, like, buddy, sassy Obi-Wan, is to, like, understand, like, where does this imposter syndrome and his promise to Qui-Gon and what he's done, like, how can that all consolidate? I apologize for these rambling answers.
No, these are...
I could talk about Anakin forever.
Great answers. We could be here all night. I know we all have other obligations, but, like, if we didn't, I'm here to talk about it all the time.
Talking about Anakin hasn't gotten old either.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. He's the best. And now I'm gonna throw you into another, you know, rambling answer, and I mean this in the best way, because it's so clear, and you've talked about it, about how much the Matthew Stover Revenge of the Sith novelization, you know, it kind of influenced you. What brought you to that novelization? When did you read it for the first time? And what speaks to you so much about Stover's writing?
I read it for the first time in 2005, like shortly after the movie. And it was basically, I think there was it was like that time when, like, it really wasn't in theaters anymore, and I wanted to revisit it. And I saw it at my library, so I just grabbed it. And then it was so good that I got the audio on CD and listened to it driving around. And it has been, like, my benchmark for, like, any genre book, really. And I talk about it all the time. And, like, I've been begging people for years, like, even if you don't like Star Wars books, you should read this. I think what really grabs me is that he took the time to, like, really dive into the characters' heads. Yeah. And, like, different Star Wars books give you different things. Sometimes it's just an adventure. Sometimes it's a one-off. Sometimes it's lore-heavy. But this is one of the few that I felt like really, really gets into the heads at a really pivotal moment. And the books don't usually get to do pivotal moments. They're usually trying to fill in gaps. So when you get the ability to get this sort of characterization on a deeper scale, but it's also, like, the peak of, like, the most important stuff in the galaxy happening in the saga, it's just the best. And so what I tried to do, and I'm really surprised that they let me do it, the Sun Dragon motif, it feels so essential to Anakin's character. Even when that book got moved to Legends, it still to me felt like this is exactly who Anakin is. And so I put it into my From a Certain Point of View story, but then I put it into my treatment for this. And I'm like, they're going to make me cut that. There's no way they're going to let me do this, but they let me do it. There's a scene, or there's actually just a single line in Stover's book where he talks about when Anakin and Obi-Wan see a dead star, and it just freaks Anakin out because he sees like this, like the most powerful thing in the galaxy, like dying. Yeah. And I put in the treatment and I'm like, I'm going to write this flashback. And like, I can't believe they let me do that. And then the other thing is like the prose, like there's this very stylized prose that Stover does where he'll say like, this is Count Dooku, this is Anakin Skywalker, this is whoever. And I wanted to make that, because I was doing a very tight third person point of view, jumping from character to character, I wanted to treat Stover's novel as basically like, this is Anakin's running inner monologue. Like, he thinks this way. And because he's all feelings, he's super emo.
So, totally.
So yeah. I grabbed that and tried to piece it in there. And I wanted to do it in a way where it felt like not just an Easter egg for people who read Stover, but for people, I wanted to feel like this is very organic. And, yeah. And so if they want to go ahead and read Stover afterwards, then, you know, I think they'll really love it. But I wanted to take like the key pieces from Stover's book and use them kind of like as the foundation for Anakin's character, because it feels like it's already there. And I didn't want it just to be an Easter egg.
Yeah, and I will, just to compliment you, I think it works so perfectly, the way that the explicit references to the book, but also just the way that they like are puzzle pieces that stick right together. And yeah. it's so wonderful to be able to like pick up these books that, you know, either consider legends, now canon, and be able to kind of read them all, mm-hmm. and get that continuity of character and really kind of have a deeper understanding of them. And, you know, we go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And I was going to say, too, like even other things like with the Palpatine Anakin talking in this book, mm-hmm. feels really like parallel to their conversation in the Roth's novel as well. Yes. And in terms of like, you know, are the Jedi and their dogma, do they mm-hmm. actually care about anybody? And that sort of gets the gears turning for Anakin. And I think the Sun Dragon motif is so critical to his character, and the way that you weave that in with Shmi, mm-hmm. and his upbringing with her. And I think that allows him to sort of build this connection with a new character in the form of Mil.
Yes,
who, Mil. You know, a youngling that joins Anakin on this journey. So I want to hear, like, what of Anakin's inherent qualities do you feel Mil brings out in him that will allow him to confidently take on a Padawan later on in Ahsoka Tano?
So one thing I will say too, for everyone who's reading this, who, if you like the character of Mil Elabeth, you should tweet about her, because the Del Rey people notice that. If you okay. want Mil to survive Order 66.
Hashtag, where is Mil Elabeth?
Yeah. Hashtag,
she's going to appear
Elabeth.
In the Bad Batch now.
That would be rad.
Some author somewhere just has to say the name. And then, as long as it's after Order 66.
Yeah, she's good.
I don't care what she's doing, as long as she's alive. So the idea, so there's two things with Mil. The first one is just from a storytelling perspective, I had this idea of like Anakin hides pieces of himself to everyone, from Padme, from Obi-Wan, from Palpatine. Like, so the three most important people in his life, he is not honest with any of them. And he feels like he's not trying to be deceitful with them. He just physically can't. Like, there are various rules that like are blocking that. And so I wanted to give him a foil with someone who sees all of him. And so with Mil, her connection with the Force is she's an empath. And so Anakin cannot hide his feelings from her. Like, they both kind of discover this together. But that's the idea, is I wanted someone who could see all of Anakin, you know, even when he tries to hide. Because the only character I could think of that might do that is the father in the Mortis trilogy. But I didn't want it to be so, like, mystical like that. I wanted to have it, like, be very grounded. So that was one of the storytelling things. And then the other one, when I mentioned a youngling to the Del Rey team, they said, like, well, this youngling cannot be anything like Ahsoka. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, don't worry. But we talked about the idea of, like, it's kind of a jump for, you go to, like, Attack of the Clones, where they're, like, arguing on the gunship over Geonosis. And then suddenly, like, a few months later, by the way, here's a Padawan, you know, and
right.
It's like, And I remember when they did the marketing for the Clone Wars movie, and they're like, Anakin has a Padawan that you didn't know about. And I was like, you know, even I was thinking, like, this is stupid. Why are they doing this just to, like, you know, this is purely like a marketing ploy. This is no basis in story. And obviously it turned into one of the greatest characters ever. But then, like, at the time, and even now, I was thinking, like, what is the jump? Like, and so it was really important to have, like, a proto Ahsoka where, you know, there's not the responsibilities of master and apprentice, but I wanted the characters to see that what Anakin does have leadership skills. Yeah. He doesn't know it yet, but we feel like this could actually be good for him.
Yeah, it's so wonderful to, like, towards the beginning of the book when he kind of first meets Mil, when he kind of just goes to her specifically. Mm-hmm. And I feel that completely, whether, like, you've seen the Clone Wars or not, just unlocks for the reader a side of them you haven't entirely seen in that way before, mm-hmm. Which is so delightful and endears you to him more.
It's, you know, what you see in Clone Wars, and this is one thing that I think really my wife was not expecting with Anakin, because she's seen Attack of the Clones and then jumped to Revenge of the Sith. But the idea that Anakin really cares about people, and like, there's a line in Brotherhood that talks about how, like, if you are loyal to Anakin, he will be loyal back to you forever. And that is, I mean, there are people, a lot of people who are like that. It's just, they're not, you know, the most powerful Force user right. in the galaxy. But that was really, really important to portray, because I think it really gives you a sense of, like, what are Anakin's ideals? Like, what is his guiding light? And then how can that be manipulated? And one of the funnest scenes for me to write as a writer was the Palpatine and Anakin scene, because it feels like every line that Palpatine says to him is like pushing a button. And it's done in a way where Anakin, like, if you read this and you read it straight, like, my dad, who does not read Star Wars, is going to, like, I know he's going to read this, but he probably has no idea who Palpatine is or what Palpatine's going to do. And he would probably find that scene kind of just boring and somewhat benign. You know, he's just like talking to his uncle dude.
Right.
But, and so that was really important to have play it two ways like that, where, like, if you're on the surface, because you have to play it that, like, you know, the characters in there, like, they don't know what's going to happen. So it's really important to show that, like, if you just watch this on the surface and you took out the context of Palpatine and Anakin and you just read that as, like, dialogue between two people who've had, like, a lifelong friendship, and it had to work, like, okay, they're just trying to help each other out and catch up after a long time. But then when you put it into the context of, like, no, this is an abuser who is very powerful and this is the person he's grooming, suddenly everything changes. And it was really, really important to, like, weave that in super tightly so that you could see how someone who is without a systemic support system, someone who has no institutional support and desperately needs it, can be manipulated into that way, which I feel like is very relevant to our current timeline.
Yeah, and you talk about Anakin needing support, and I feel like there's a couple times in the book where Obi-Wan says, like, should I talk to Anakin about what's obviously something with Padme going on, yeah. right? And he actively chooses not to have that conversation. And, you know, he kind of thinks about how funny it is with him and Satine and, you know, like, what Anakin would think of that as well. But I think something your book did so well was illustrating how Anakin and Padme are intimate mm-hmm. After the Attack of the Clones wedding mm-hmm. and, like, what that looks like when they finally get to have a date night and be husband and wife and get into the mind of Anakin and, like, what he would truly want, which is maybe to, you know, what is a life not in war and not as a Jedi potentially. So, like, what was it like for you to write those scenes of them being affectionate, especially in such a less turbulent time than we get in Revenge of the Sith when
yeah. Yeah.
the stakes are so high, you know, like, you know, she's not pregnant by that point. There's not the war's not ending, you know, all that stuff.
Because even in Clone Wars, whenever they see each other, it's always like, you know, they're just passing ships. And this is why I always say that this book should be read in tandem with E.K. Johnston's Queen's Hope, which covers the wedding, their short honeymoon, but also the, like, when Padme's closest friends, her handmaidens, like, when they discover the marriage and, like, what do they think about it? I was actually thinking, because I had just listened to the audiobook of Queen's Hope after like reading it a long time ago when I was writing Brotherhood. Like I read an advanced copy, but I was re-listening to the audiobook on my drive to Celebration, and then I jumped right into the Brotherhood audiobook, which I haven't experienced yet. And I was thinking, like, these two books, Queen's Hope is like, I mean, you could call it sisterhood because it's Padme and it's Sabe. And then you have, like, what's joining them together is Padme and Anakin. And then Brotherhood has Anakin and Obi-Wan. And it's like, if you look at them as kind of like this duology around Padme and Anakin, and it's like their two spheres of influence around them. Like, they really, really work because they cover this time period that's not really covered. And it was really just important to be like, why do these two people like each other? Other than the fact that they are both extremely good looking and in their early 20s.
Right.
I mean, a lot of bad relationships happen that way. But the, but I think what Kate did in Queen's Hope, and it's really cool. Like if you look at the conversations that Padme and Sabe have about Anakin, and then you go to date night in Brotherhood and you see how Anakin views his wife, they really, really line up because the idea is that they're like yin and yang and how, or puzzle pieces, how they fit each other. Because Padme is like her whole life, everything has been like systemically controlled. You know, she is super passionate, but she is very, very controlled. Anakin has no institutional support across his entire life. He is all feelings, but he has no way of containing that. So they're both good people at their heart, but they both operate in completely different ways. And they balance each other that way. And then when you bring into the fact that, you know, they're both hot and they're both around the same age, but they both really enjoy this thing that, like, they desperately want. Like, Anakin knows he needs to control his feelings, but he can't. Padme knows that she's, like, you know, she could just cut loose one of these times and not plan everything, you know. So to have them kind of, like, balance each other out, I mean, my wife and I, like, I am the planner. My wife is, like, the more, like, instinctive, impulsive person, the more fiery person. Like, I am the more chill, like, let's figure this out type of person. Like, there's so many couples that are like that. And I think they're just drawn to each other. Like, you have a core of, like, shared, you know, beliefs or shared passions or whatever, or you're just attracted to each other. But then you balance each other out on a personality level. And that's what Anakin and Padme do for each other.
Yeah, I think we're coming to time, and we could, I'm genuinely, we could talk to you all day about this book and about how amazing the prequels are and how much we love the Rotz novel because it's literally the most perfect thing to ever exist. I guess our final question for you is, what impact do you hope Brotherhood has on readers, and, you know, what do you hope that they take away from this story and Anakin and Obi-Wan's relationship?
I think, like, everyone loves Obi-Wan. I mean, so I think I want them to understand Obi-Wan more. Like, there's parts in Brotherhood when we talked a little earlier about how Obi-Wan... I didn't think I was really, like, affecting canon by hinting that Obi-Wan knows something's going on between Anakin and Padme. Because, I mean, in Attack of the Clones, like, it opens with them talking about Anakin and Padme.
Yes.
And then on the gunship, you know, like... Anakin's like, I want to go save her. And he's like, don't let your feelings get in the way. I'm like, so it's clear, like, they know something's happening. The thing that was missing was, how much does he know about her side of things? And so I wanted to show that, like, he knows something's going on. And the bigger battle is, he's arguing with himself about what to do about it. Because you see hints about it in the Clone Wars series. And so it's like, I really wanted to, like, establish, like, the foundation for that. That's Obi-Wan's big arc. And I think part of it is it mirrors the institutional failings of the Jedi, because Obi-Wan is like, he says throughout the book, he's like, I should do something. Like, no, you know what? He's a Jedi. I have faith in him. Like, we should just let this play out because that's how things work. I trust in him. The problem with that is you have Palpatine. And you have the Clone War moving at such a fast pace that they never get a chance to do that. And it's the same issue with Anakin and Padme's marriage, is they don't have time to sit down and talk about it. They don't even have time for date night, because the Clone War and Palpatine are just tearing everything apart. So I wanted to show that Obi-Wan Obi-Wan is such a true North character, and he believes so much in his institution and his, you know, faith in the Jedi and the Republic, that he cannot possibly fathom that they are being manipulated. Even when Count Dooku tells him that, and he's like, no, that's not true. And so I really want that sort of like journey for Obi-Wan, where it's like, oh, we understand why he did the things that he did, but, you know, like in hindsight, probably shouldn't have done that.
Sure, yeah.
And then with Anakin, it's basically just, you know, what I talked about earlier about like that bridge in personality between Attack of the Clones and the Clone Wars. But the main thing is, like, I want readers to like Anakin, because Anakin's a great character, and I want them, perhaps more important than liking him, is to empathize with him, because he is probably, I feel like, the most complex character in Star Wars. He's got the most going against him. He's like, you know, he's got the Jedi telling him, you're the chosen one, but don't do that. And he can't be honest with his best friend. He can't be honest with his wife. And he's got like this evil uncle who's like manipulating him. So he's got all of these things just like tearing him apart. And the poor guy is like, he wants to help everything because he cares so much about it. And to show that and really bring it to the surface increases his your like, reader's ability to empathize with him and to like him, because he's a great character. And like you know, it's funny, and again, I'm sorry I'm rambling.
No, apologies.
My wife was listening to the audiobook of this, and she said, like, she was listening to it like on a marathon session while she was doing stuff, and she said about a third of the way, she's like, I just had to stop for a bit. And I'm like, why? She goes, I just got so sad, because she's like, you could see, you know, why it fell apart, but you can also see how good it was. And she's like, I don't know if I can ever watch Revenge of the Sith again.
It doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. Happily ever after.
Revenge of the Sith is brutal as is, yeah. You know?
So I think, like, that's exactly the response that I want people to have. I want them to, like, empathize with these characters and recognize what they're going up against. And by the time they get to Revenge of the Sith, I want them to root for them even more. Like, we all went into Revenge of the Sith and be like, oh, Anakin's going to turn into Darth Vader, and that's going to be cool. And then now I want people to read this book and be like, I don't want Anakin to turn into Darth Vader.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. That's a great point. And you know, I think, too, with Qui-Gon, the relationship between them two, thinking about what he saw in each of them and how that connects them. So it's a really beautiful story, and I agree. Once it ended, I'm like, oh, I know how the story ends eventually, and it's heartbreaking. But
I'll say too, like, the best feedback that I've gotten, and I'm really happy that like I've gotten this consistently, is that I've seen people call it essential, in that like a lot of Star Wars books are like, they're like an episode of Clone Wars, where it's like, this is fun, it was exciting, it was cool, but it's like, yeah, you could skip it and you're not going to miss anything. But to have people call it like, this is essential, this is Clone Wars season zero, it bridges, for it to be recognized as that, is like, that's mission accomplished right there.
Yeah. Well, with that, we just want to sincerely thank you for your time today and joining us here on the podcast. We've really, really enjoyed listening to you talk about this book and just getting to kind of share that in that energy and excitement. So thank you again. And where can the people find you? Can you promote?
I am on Twitter most of the time at Mike Chen Writer. And I always say that you have to be very specific about Mike Chen Writer, because there are so many people on the planet named Mike Chen, including a very famous YouTube guy. I am also on Instagram at Mike Chen Writer, but that's mostly pictures of my dog or going on hikes with my daughter.
Still very important content. Yes. We love dog content.
We really do.
And then my website is MikeChenBooks.com. I don't think I've even updated that since Brotherhood came out, so I have to update that. But yeah, that's where you'll find me. And I am happy to answer non-spoiler or light spoiler questions on Brotherhood, as long as you're nice about it.
All right. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to our interview with author Mike Chen. Again, Star Wars Brotherhood is out now. We also just posted our spoiler discussion on the book earlier this week. So if you want sort of the dual threat here at Friends of the Force with the discussion and the interview, I think they complement each other very well. So go check out that other episode. And in the meantime, you can find Sarah and I on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Goodreads. And you can also follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure wherever you're listening to the show to subscribe to the podcast and also leave us a 5-star written review if you could, because it helps other folks find the show and join the Star Wars discussion. So it's always a good time to make more friends of the Force.
Yes, and we also have a Patreon where tiers start at just a dollar, and we are so eternally grateful for our patrons: Amy, Brian with an I, Brian with a Y, Carol, Cheryl, Clay, Danny, Davis, Dylan, Deborah, Donnie, Elegy, Huang, Jen, Knights of Ren, Levi, Leanne, Lucy, Lindsay, Luke, Randy, Rob, Saber Bouquet, Sky Talkers, Travis, and T.
Yes, so thank you all once again for listening, and until next time, may the Force be with you always.
Happy Pride! Bye!